Members of the committee will come to order. We're not quite a quorum yet, but we will be hopefully within the next few seconds. We've got two bills up today. We did have three listed on the calendar. We decided not to, the chair decided not to hear the Bingham bill today. Our hope is to be able to have that heard quickly on Thursday. The first bill up is House File 106, Representative Swales, P20 Education Partnership Established. Representative Swales, we'll move your bill once we're at quorum and we can officially conduct business.
House File, can I go ahead and begin?
Please do, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 106 is pretty straightforward. We already have a P16 partnership in the state of Minnesota. It comprises of many educational organizations, including the University of Minnesota, MinSU, the Private College Council, the Department of Education, PPSA, Education Minnesota, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, School Board Association, Citizens League, and so on. Currently, President Brunix from the University of Minnesota is the formal chair of the committee. Alice Segrin has also served as a chair, and previously Chancellor McCormick from MinSU. The group has worked to explore a variety of ideas, P16 identification systems, college access programs, remediation study and action plan, alignment requirements for college readiness and work skill standards, aligned math assessment, and the coordination of web-based career information sites. All of these are wonderful undertakings that the P16 partnership has considered and debated and analyzed. The bill that I am proposing is simply to allow legislators to be at the table. I provided you a handout this morning, and I had one printed for the hearing on Thursday. We didn't have time to get to the bill. But there are 30 states in the nation that have P16 or P20 partnerships, which includes people all the way from preschool through graduate school. I went on a tour of four MinSU campuses. Chancellor McCormick was my guide. And one of the final stops was at St. Cloud University, where I spoke to a delegation or a group of 12 doctoral candidates in the area of education. And these candidates would be focusing on innovative things that they would be doing in the field of education as part of this study. Expanding it to 20 includes those doctoral candidates so that they also can have a place at the table. Basically, what this bill is suggesting is, and the large handout that I gave to you last Thursday, and I don't know if you still have it or not, but it shows what P20 or P16 partnerships, what their memberships look like. And in doing my research on this bill, what I found was the most effective partnerships throughout the 30 states that have them are the ones where the legislature is at the table, and generally where either the governor or the lieutenant governor are also a member. I also gave you this morning a copy of a article on the state of Colorado. Governor Bill Ritter from Colorado reported on Colorado's P20 or P16 partnership with the 21 proposals that the state of Colorado has made for educational improvement. And actually, many of the topics here in this list of 21 items are the exact things that we are grappling with here in Minnesota. So just so you know, we're asking that it be a bipartisan addition to the P20 partnership, that the Senate will appoint one member of the majority party, that the Speaker of the House will appoint one member of the majority party, that the minority leader will appoint one member, and in the Senate, likewise, one minority member would be appointed. We would like to have a voice at the table. If we are the people that are to implement new educational ideas and strategies for the state, We would like to be a part of those discussions so that we are well informed and that we can also make contributions, because many of us come from educational backgrounds and would be very, very honored to be part of those discussions.
Thank you, Representative Swales. So the nature of the current table in Minnesota is really a voluntary presence. There's no legal formal structure that establishes or guides
it. It's a voluntary organization. It's now under its third president, President mm-hmm. Brunick.
Mm-hmm.
But when they meet, like their most recent meeting was during the day, within the last month, and even though legislators, we are told, are invited because of our schedule here at the Castle, no one from the legislature was in attendance. So we're just simply asking that we, the implementers of public policy, have a seat at the table.
Thank you. We do have several questions. Representative McFarland.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You've kind of answered my first question about right now legislators are welcome to be there. They're just not a part of the actual panel.
Correct.
Is that right? Would you be suggesting then that the legislators would be voting members on this panel? And
well, I'm sorry, we should get that for the record. I'm hearing yeses to both those answers from Representative Wales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize.
Representative McFarland.
And this other is more maybe of a comment. The status of the current P16 partnership, have they come forward with recommendations, and are we implementing any of them? Are you aware of?
Representative Swales.
You know, probably, Mr. Chair and Representative McFarland, I would say that the chair of this committee would be the one who would have the most input on that question, and if he could answer it, that would be more appropriate.
Representative Swales and Representative McFarland, I've participated on the Minnesota P16 Council from its inception, although I did not do so officially in a capacity as a state legislator. As you know, I direct a small nonprofit, education policy research nonprofit, and we were invited at the very beginning to, in fact, I think we were the first nonprofit that were invited to the table. I think there's a handful of others that are there as well, a good number of people from the private for-profit sector. The latest initiative that came out of the P16 relative to legislation was last year, where they requested permission relative to our data privacy laws to be able to share certain data across the K-12, but the post-secondary educational system, for the purposes of beginning to establish a database that would have information that can connect attributes in K-12 to post-secondary success and vice versa. We did act on that as a legislature. I carried the bill as a standalone bill, and we did in the end respond favorably to their request. So it's not a, in their brief history, it's not been a typical, action or behavior on their part, but I suspect, and I think perhaps Representative Swales is even encouraging, that in fact, as policy continues to develop across that collaborative table, that in fact those proposals, where they're helpful in terms of where legislation could be helpful, will in fact come forward on a regular basis. And I do think, I'm going beyond the question here, but I do think that there is a wisdom of being able to have a formal way in which our ongoing policy development as legislators, at least as transparent back and forth with the P16 Council. Representative
Just a follow-up. I know on some of the appointments that I've received on commissions as the legislative liaison, I've not had voting powers, and I'm just kind of curious about that concept. I understand being at the table, but I'm not sure about, we have the voting power here at the legislature to make those changes, and so I just question that. Anybody, I don't know if you have a response to that.
Representative Spoiled.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will do what the will of the body is. I believe in the legislation itself. Get the language out here.
So I was like, you're doing that. I'm going to officially call the meeting. I did call it to order, but I guess I really can't do that until we have a quorum. So we are at quorum, and we are officially convened. And while Representative Swells is looking at that as well, perhaps Representative Demmer, you can do us the favor of moving the February 19th minutes, which are in your packet, and the 18th as well. Okay, both the February 18th and the... I don't see the 18th minutes. Are they both there? Okay, February 18th and February 19th.
I will move the February 9th. I don't see the 18th.
Yeah, I didn't see them in my packet either. Let's make sure you all have them.
You have the 18th?
I have
them. Okay.
Representative Downey has your minutes.
I got up early this morning and made sure.
Pick through your file, Representative Downey.
I'm impressed. Mr. Chair, I would move both the February 18th and February 19th minutes.
Thank you. Representative Demmer moves the minutes of February 18th and February 19th. Any discussion? If not, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Demmer. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. As I look at the language of this, it looks like it would be full membership. There's nothing in there that indicates that it would just be sitting at the table and listening. It does say that they would become members of the partnership. Perhaps Ms. Larson could amplify that, but I think that's correct.
Let me just signal to Ms. Chris, Ms. Q, and I believe Ms. Ani is here as well from the department. And I'm wondering if you can perhaps shed a little bit of light in terms of sort of procedures on the P16 Council. I should know this, but I actually don't. My sense is that, Ms. Chris, my sense is that we're not a legally incorporated entity, so there's no bylaws. I think if we have procedures for issues of voting, I think they're ad hoc. I mean, I don't think that there's a, I don't recall seeing anything like that, that would confer voting rights and determine the voting. And I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but I'm wondering if perhaps you can shed a little light on what the nature of procedures are, particularly on this issue of voting at the council. Ms. Chris.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Frist. I'm with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'd say a couple of things. First of all, I could correct Representative Mariani. There aren't very often votes taken by the partnership. It's more a sort of body that discusses and considers and reviews and shapes and operates by consensus.
Mm-hmm.
There is a structure that designates, if you will, a lead member, official member, representative of each of the members, and when there is a vote, those people do vote. We don't have bylaws. We have, frankly, very minimal rules of operation and structure. So I don't think there's really anything that we have in writing for a partnership that would speak one way or another to the role of legislators as voting or not voting.
Thank you, Ms. Chris. We have several questions. Representative Peterson and, perhaps not, Representative Detke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swales, you had mentioned that there are other states that have this type of council. Are they formulated similarly to ours? And also, how many of them have legislators at the table in a voting capacity?
Representative Swales.
Mr. Chair and Representative Depsey, there are 30 organizations set up around the nation. The chart that I gave to you the other day shows all of the voting, or all of the, what comprises a membership.
We do have the chart here, Representative Swales.
Yeah, mine is at the table. I apologize. I don't have that here with me. But if you would look at that large chart, it shows the composition of each of those. I will have to tell you, 3 years ago, Representative McFarland, Representative Dreiling, and I had the opportunity to travel to Austin, Texas on a fact-finding trip. We were invited there by the Texas Department of Education, the Gates Foundation, and the Dell Foundation in order to look at high school redesign. And one of the very first meetings that we had that morning before we went on this tour of a variety of schools and universities, we were introduced by a gentleman from the Texas Chamber of Commerce who was at that time the head of the T16 partnership in Texas. And the business community is a very involved component of their partnership, and they are incredibly involved with the state legislators and the Department of Education. And the reason these partnerships, and this was my first exposure to it as a new legislator, but Texas found that they had very bright students in high school. But then when these students went out to college, they had to go through what they call the remediation process, which we've spent a lot of time talking about. So they did a survey in Texas, and the T16 partnership was a part of that survey process that said, we have very bright students in Texas. They're going to college, and they're not meeting the entrance expectations. And so they developed this partnership so that colleges started talking to high schools. High schools started talking to junior highs. Junior highs started talking to elementary schools and so forth. And out of that, they built a scope and sequence of standards so that when students went to colleges knew how the students had been prepared, and they began to adjust as well. So we don't have that in Minnesota. We have a lot of colleges that here we are up here, that kind of an entity under themselves, an entity in the University of Minnesota, but they are here. And I think we're starting to do a better job of talking about where those high school standards meet the expectations of colleges, but we're not there yet. And looking at the Texas model, I was incredibly impressed by that, and to see the full participation of legislators involved in their partnership. That's kind of, I hope that answers your question in a very Martha Swales elaborated way. Sorry.
Representative Dusty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just one follow-up question to that as well. Are the current council, I would assume they're aware of this bill, and are they in favor of having legislators at the table voting?
Thank you, Representative.
Good question, Mr. Chair.
I have talked to several members of the partnership, and what I have heard is that their concern is that it would bring partisanship to the council. Probably the Department of Education representative could speak to that maybe as well, but by crafting the bill in such a way that we have a member of the majority party and minority from both the House and Senate, that we can bring this bipartisanship to the table and have these discussions and to not let one party dominate any presence at the council.
Representative Swales, I'm just shocked that a group would think that legislators would bring partisanship to any. Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate what you're doing here and what the P16 Coalition does. I think that it's great, but my concern is whether it makes sense to change it to a P20 or not. My belief is that we focus so much on getting our high school students ready for college that we miss a lot of opportunities to get them ready for job skills, and by changing it to P20, I'm afraid that we're going to make that even worse instead of better. And so I'm just would like to hear your reaction to that, if that is a concern, or I shouldn't be worried about that.
Mr. Chair, I'm Representative South. The piece of literature that I gave you this morning from the state of Colorado, it shows that their P20 council is incredibly effective. A difference from ours is that their governor or their lieutenant governor chairs it. I think it's an interesting use of a lieutenant governor, actually. But the reason we have discussed it, Senator Wieger in the Senate is carrying it, and as I said at the beginning of the meeting, there are many doctoral candidates who are doing their dissertations on education research, and inviting these people to the table as well, who are continuing their education, that I think will actually strengthen what we do, is a good the University of Minnesota, MinSCU, provide doctoral programs. I don't think that the membership would be skewed towards doctoral candidates, but they represent that part of their higher education that I think would have a very credible voice at the table.
I can add, Representative Fowles, that at the table, also president of the Minnesota Private Proprietary Colleges. I think pretty exclusively all who offer, sort of what I think what we would consider career certificates, as opposed to focused on, purely academic degree concerns that gets us into the BA and other degrees. I think it's an important, seems to me that that's an important element to always consider here. I think there is sort of this psychological tendency to sort of ignore, career tracks that are not necessarily tied to advanced degrees. I think there is a bit of a, perhaps subconscious bias that is reflected often in our discourse and our policy. But I do know that those individuals are at that table as well and representing those interests. Representative Greiley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Representative Swales already mentioned this, then just signal and I'll be quiet. But I wasn't here at the earlier hearing, and I wanted to make sure that members knew that having legislators on the P16 Council is a strong recommendation of the Education Commission of the State. Did you already mention that, Representative Swales? No. Okay. Governor Pawlenty is the present chair of the Education Commission of the State, and I am one of the commissioners on it, along with many others, including Commissioner Segrin. And they are a group, if members aren't familiar with them, that do research on education issues and then share it with us. And they come here, and in fact will be here in the next several weeks, where we can talk with them again and familiarize ourselves with what they do and how they can help us. But they do occasionally do research on real research, not just take a position based on what they think. It's what research shows. And that is that the two major things that you can do to have a successful P16 council that actually has clout and is listened to, the first one is make sure the governor is supportive, and our governor is supportive, and Commissioner Segrin is a vital part of it. And the second thing is to make sure legislators are a part of it. If you, as Representative Well said, are operating the P16 Council in a vacuum, you're more at a vacuum from the legislators. You're more apt to have work on smaller things and not be such players when your recommendations come to the legislators. They've done fine work and things like coming up with a number for kids all the way through, but by not having legislators actively involved at the table and fairly represented and participating, that already hamstrings you and shoots you in the foot for not having your P16 council be widely recognized in doing big things and helping us from the get-go when their recommendations come here. So that's based on research, members, and I hope we will strongly support this. I would submit also, secondarily, and I said this last time when we had all the people at the table, it's partisan right now by having only the governor's office involved. That is one party. And it could be that you could have all parties, House and Senate and governor could all be the same party. But by having only one branch and not the other two, then I think it's currently partisan. We just happen to have Representative Mariani on it because of his other job. But he's not representing the legislature with that hat.
Right. Thank you, Representative Glowney. Representative Swales, I'm going to officially have you move the bill so it's before us. We started the conversation before quorum. So Representative Swales moves that House File 106 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the Early Childhood Education Committee, where Representative Slawick has requested to see the bill, because obviously this is a T20 bill, and so there are early childhood need to review that from the Early Childhood Committee. So that's the motion before you, members. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we going to hear from anybody on the P16 and their thoughts about this?
I will certainly invite them down, and we can certainly do that now. We had a couple of other members here. or who have questions. Now, the only folks I see in the audience that are, you know, is Ms. Chris and Ms. Downey. I'm wondering if anyone else is here from the council that would wish to offer testimony on the bill. If so, please come forward. All right. We can, and Representative Devon, we can always direct questions, too. That's another way to flush them out, if you will. Representative Downey has a question. We will also take testimony from folks who are generally supportive or not supportive. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One maybe real simple question, and I think some of the recent questions have gotten at the core of my real question. And so the easy one, I think, is, does the P-16 council disappear and now become the P-20? The bill as it's written almost implies that maybe the P-16 council continues as its own entity while another council called the P-20 still exists.
Mr. Chair and Representative Downey, no. This would be the same committee with a new name and four additional members.
I don't know how this all fits in with statute, Mr. Chairman, but maybe just a quick clarifying sentence amendment added in here at some point just to indicate that the P-16 doesn't continue to exist. As I read the bill, it wasn't entirely clear. But I think I got my other question answered, and that was, so what isn't happening today that would happen by virtue of having the legislators on there? And I think actually Representative Greiling's statement answered that. But is there any downside to that? I mean, what is the downside? I actually wouldn't be as worried about the partisanship. I mean, everything's kind of partisan, right? People have their opinions. I'm assuming within the partnership there are different perspectives. But does it maybe not think as big because the legislators are there? Are there any downsides to this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, when I was first elected and I went to my first State of the State address, the governor laid out a lot of initiatives related to education that probably were, their genesis happened as discussions of the P-16 partnership. But in talking to my colleagues who are on the Education Committee, some of these initiatives were brand new, never discussed before, but this group had the benefit of discussing and having ownership of those ideas. I think it would make our work here easier. It would make the transition from one new idea to another if those of us who are here in the legislature have access to those conversations. I think that's only a plus. It's a win-win for both bodies. And as far as the downside, after reading, I've read extensively about P-16, P-20 partnerships across the nation. The most effective ones in the nation are the ones where the legislature are actively engaged and are able to take legislation immediately to the reviser and say, we need a bill related to this idea, and then the discussion moves forward in a more public forum here. So I think it's a win for all of us.
Representative Downey, I'm intrigued by the first question because you really don't have a legal entity, if you will, and currently, but now we would be creating one, although pretty loosely. The language does in the bill refer to the P-16 Education Partnership on line 119 and also on line 112 and basically calls on the chair of the existing, it doesn't say existing, but I would assume that's what that means, partnership to convene the first meeting of the P-20 partnership. So there's an implication here that, in fact, one really replaces the other, I would read. Although it's weird because the other doesn't actually exist, technically, legally. Representative Peterson, we had jumped over you earlier. You were working on your bill. Okay. Thank you. Representative McFarland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of a comment. Everybody knows I have a passion for trying to bring the business community and the education communities together to collaborate. And I noticed there's 21 members of the membership roster of the current P-16, and only two represent the business community. And I did like the model down in Texas and how the chamber became a big player in this, and I'd like to see some movement towards that in this P-20 proposal.
Representative Swales.
Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland, I think that the P16 partnership members, particularly under the guidance of President Brunick, probably would be very, very open to that invitation. At this point, I'm only asking for membership of the legislators. I think that it is the will of that body to decide where that invitation is. So, but I do agree Texas was onto something, and they had really built a lot of trust between those entities, and I came away very impressed.
And I can add, Representative McFarland, that I think that value is shared among the commissioner, the university president, as well as the MNCU chancellor. And early on, there was an invitation to both the Minnesota Chamber and the Minnesota Business Partnership, and they've been at the table. And then I think perhaps a year into their existence, they invited the High Tech Association as well, who are currently at the table. And there could formally be other groups, but I know at least those three groups are currently at the table. Are there any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the bill? Ms. Alney, please come forward. It's Dr. Alney, I believe. So, Dr. Alney, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, representatives of the committee. We'd like to bring up a few other points about this bill. I should identify myself. I'm Beth Alney, Director of Academic Standards and P16 Initiatives at the Department of Education. The department is concerned with the expansion that this bill brings to the partnership. And there are a few points that we want to bring up. Last year we did some research into whether it would be a good idea or not to put such a partnership in statutory language. And we talked extensively to the program officer, who is recognized as the national authority in statewide partnerships. She is Jan Somerville from the National Association of System Heads, NASH. And she works every day with statewide partnerships. And we asked her, you know, is this a good idea to put it in statute or not? And she basically said, well, six of one, half a dozen of the other. She said, but if you look at some of our best partnerships around the country, and she named three of them. She named Georgia, Indiana, and Maryland. And those of us who have been involved in partnerships work know that indeed they have been real trendsetters in this area, establishing a lot of great innovation and reform in teacher quality initiatives and transition kinds of initiatives for students moving from high school into post-secondary. But none of those states, Georgia, Indiana, Maryland, have their partnerships in state statute. She mentioned that one, while it does provide increased leverage, to some degree, and increased visibility by having it in state statute. She said one thing you have to think about is the partnership loses its nimbleness to restructure as the context might change. An example of that is in Maryland, where they restructured to become a governor's education council. But there are other examples of how that works as well. Another thing that she mentioned is that considerable energy could be expanded by regulatory or prescriptive kinds of things, such as this annual report, preparing the report, disseminating the report, presenting analysis, attending hearings at the Capitol, and this kind of thing that one would expect if indeed the partnership were put into state statute. And then she noted that the three states that I mentioned previously all have very, very strong, you know, very functional working relationships among all the members of the partnership. And they have another thing in common, and that is they have, first of all, a small committed budget to sustain the work of the partnership. And secondly, they all have a full-time staff person whose only job it is to oversee the work of the partnership. So this bill mandates that the partnership be put in statute, but it doesn't provide that kind of funding to support it. So those are some other points that we would just bring to your attention.
Thank you, Dr. Ani. I am noting on the ECS handout of different councils that they reference the Indiana Council as having participation from both the executive and the legislative branch. I suspect that these are all structured in many different ways, but I just wanted to note that. So. Dr. Ali.
Yes. Mr. Chair, yes. What I was talking about was whether or not it's established in statute,
okay.
Not whether legislators are involved.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. Representative Growley has a comment or a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was kind of along the lines of my question. You know, the fact that it's going to statute or being proposed to go to statute is because the legislators haven't been invited. And I'm wondering, in other successful states, without having to go to statute, has there been such hesitancy to have the legislators be full partners at the table? Because that's the reason for the legislation. And I remember Ms. Christ, who's behind me here today, from Minsky, saying at one time early on when I was at a P16 meeting, and it was a newer entity at that time, that they didn't really want the legislature monkeying around with things that they, you know, they would take money, but they didn't want any strings. And I think with money does go strings. So I think you can't have it both ways, no legislative involvement and then wanting staff people and funding. If it's to be nimble and casual and, you know, to be able to respond to things quickly, then I think having it not in statute and not funded is maybe the way to go. But then we're here because legislators have been snubbed, and I don't think that... that's not borne out with the research by the Education Commission of the states. And so I'm wondering, with the three states that you cited as doing so well, how many of them have legislative involvement?
Dr. Ani.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, I can't state the degree to which they've all been involved, but I can say that there's been involvement. There's been involvement on some level in all three of those states' partnerships.
Representative Glenn.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Ani, why has that not happened in Minnesota?
Dr. Ani.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my belief is that this structure has slowly emerged. Every year it gets a little bit different. You know, we think of who's missing or who needs to be at the table, who's not there. I think that's part of it, that we're still in the infant stage of development. It really hasn't been a formalized partnership for all that long. Secondly, I think there's a concern, whether it's warranted or not, that if legislators are on the partnership, perhaps some members will feel reticent or reluctant to speak out in opposition to a stance that a legislator might be taking, perhaps out of concerns that, you know, their best interests could be affected. So I think it gets into some concerns about partisanship, about that, you know, perhaps people may not speak as freely as they would if those folks weren't in the room. So,
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Ani, sorry to belabor this, but the governor is in the room with either himself or the commissioner, so I don't see that one side should be spoken freely in front of, and then the other side is not. If it wants, if this would be a governor's council, and just say that it is to inform the governor and not the legislature, that would be fine. But this is pretending to be, you know, broad-based and informing all of us. But yet we end up in the position of not knowing what's going on, and then being told. I've been told once by Commissioner Segrin that if I knew what was going on in the P16, I might not be saying what I was saying or proposing that. And I just think that's not good. But, you know, we should keep in mind that it's here for, I'm assuming, the students. And the more people involved, you know, when you're working on something that you really want to pass here, you don't keep it a secret and shroud it from others. You try to involve as many people as you can so that it can take root and be supported bipartisanly and by everybody. And by having it, you know, closeted over there with just the governor's branch of government, I think doesn't help, isn't the best thing for students. And I would hope that people could speak up in front of legislators just like they do in front of the governor.
Mr. Gravely, I think it's a good point, and I tend to agree with you. I know in my own presence there, I've been very conscious of the dynamics that Dr. Aune, has expressed. I think it is one that I would hope that if this is successful, legislators are there formally to bear in mind that the culture is to really encourage creative, outside of the box kind of thinking. I think that the commissioner has conducted herself mostly along those lines in her interaction with the P16. But I think your point is well taken. If the executive branch can conduct themselves in that manner, so can legislators. And I think I think that the benefit far outweighs the potential negatives in this case. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I guess I have to take a bit issue with Representative Greiling and the assertion that because the Commissioner of Education is at a meeting, that it's all, for some reason, all of a sudden partisan now. She's the Commissioner of the Education, and the fact that she represents the governor, and therefore it's a partisan committee, I just can't agree with that. I don't think that's a fair assumption. I don't think we have to take that approach. The P16 partnership started up, from my understanding, not because the legislature said they should. They started up because they thought it was the right thing to do. You got President Brunick from the university, you got Chancellor McCormick, you've got leaders of different groups throughout the state that have come together to talk about education. They didn't form because of the legislature. They haven't asked the legislature to do anything. They just want to get together as a group and talk about education issues and do these things. I personally have attended their meetings, and I've been invited, and I've never been known to not be invited or say I can't come. We have organizations and groups meeting all over the state about all kinds of issues, and they don't always have to be formally part of the legislative process. They haven't asked for this. I just don't know that we can. I can even go into the bill if you'd like. I mean, we talked about the P16 partnership as a thing mandated. There's no formal structure that I'm aware of, and yet we mandate that the chair of that partnership has to convene a meeting. Well, what's to say they have to do anything? They can say, go fly a kite if they want to. They don't have to tell me to go chair a meeting if I don't want to. It talks about that they shall be represented by chief executives and presidents. Well, can we mandate that a president or a chief executive of anybody come to any meeting? I think it's prescriptive. I think it's trying to draw a legislative box on something that's a really good thing. And to say that legislators aren't involved, and to say that legislators can't take input from them to do good things. We're talking about the president of the university. We're talking about the chancellor of MNSCU. We're talking about the commissioner of education. We're talking about leaders. Mr. Doerr from the Education Minnesota is part of this. We got Bill Blazer from the Chamber of Commerce. These are not people that don't have connections. These are not people that can't get things done. I don't know that we have to formalize things with this kind of a process and add this when they haven't asked for anything. They haven't asked for this to happen, to be effective. And I have hesitation with doing something to them. I don't know if we're doing anything for them, but they were doing something to them. And I'm not sure we need to do that. And even in terms of money, and I know that I don't disagree. If there's public money being involved, Representative Grabbing, you mentioned that there are quote-unquote strings. I would prefer to use a different word for that, for accountability and all that. And that's all fine. I don't disagree with that. But to my knowledge, they haven't asked for any money. And so why do we impose upon them our process when they're trying to get together and do good things? So unless I hear from anybody on the P16 that there's something to add to this, that this adds something to their mission, that this would make them somehow more effective, I'm not inclined to support the proposal. Representative Swales, I think it's, I understand what you're trying to do. I think it's good. I'm just not sure we need to. That's my point.
Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the bill? If not, Representative Swales, we're going to move to a vote here. Comments before we do that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to state that we do have a fiscal note on this. It is zero. The cost of the partnership is absorbed by the members that participate in it. We do know that from looking at other models around the nation that when the legislative branch and
The governor's office is actively involved, that they are the most effective, and I continue to stand by that. I think Minnesota has a wonderful educational system, but when these groups, or when this group meets and legislators are not able to participate in the dialogue, I think it makes our work harder because it will take us a while to hear the innovations and the ideas that are coming out of that group that we could apply to education throughout the state. I am an absolute committed educator, first and foremost. I am a teacher far beyond being a legislator, and I want what is best for the students that I teach, for my school district, and for the students of Minnesota. And I believe that if there are innovations out there that are happening and we can bring them to the table more quickly, the P20 partnership is a wonderful vehicle for us to be able to do that. I thank the committee so much for considering this, and I do ask for your vote.
Members, the motion then is before you, and that is to recommend that House File 106 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the Early Childhood. Let me make sure I get the name of the correct name of the committee. The Early Childhood Education
Finance
and Policy Committee. Representative McFarland.
Just a point of clarification. Is this really a task force then if it doesn't have any money to it? And if so, would it go to GovOps at any point?
I'm hearing from staff that we would need to go to GovOps. Yeah, I'm seeing nods of the head. So I would suspect that if the bill is successful in Representative Flowick's committee, that would be an appropriate motion at that point. Very well. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Wales. Thank you, Dr. Arnie. We do have some, I believe, high school pages present with us today. Yeah, I'm pushing you guys out. So why don't you stand up so we see who you are. Welcome. Good to have you here today. Please welcome our high school pages. Good to see young people up early. Maybe I can have you speak with my 14-year-old afterwards. Representative Peterson, House File 679. Representative Peterson, I believe your motion would be to recommend that House File 679, or your motion would be that House File 679 be recommended to pass. And I'm thinking that we will lay this over for possible inclusion in our policy article bill, unless you have another desire. I'm fine, but that's the chair's thinking on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's exactly what I would have moved. So thank you very much.
Very well.
I also would like to move the amendment A179A1. And it just is really inserting one word, actually changing staff to administrator. And that occurred after discussion with teachers and principals and administrators. And so at this point, we're at the point of saying that it would require a school administrator to notify a student's parent or guardian.
Representative Peterson moves the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape that she would want us to consider today. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Peterson, your bill is before us in the form you wish it to be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a very important bill. As many of you will recall, 2 years ago, we passed a bullying bill. It was cut back a great deal, and it really dealt more with cyberbullying, but it did require that every school district have a policy in their district and perhaps even in their local school regarding intimidation or bullying of students. And this bill is just a tiny incremental step in changing that policy or moving it forward and making it a little more able to be implemented.
And it assures that parents are notified if a student is bullying others according to the local school district policy. And so it does maintain the local control over the policy and how it would be implemented. But I have with me today David St. Germain, and he is a teacher, a former teacher from Chaska High School, 33 years actually in the classroom, a former negotiator, a school leader, and he was so interested and passionate about the subject of bullying that he established his own company about restorative learning 20 years ago, and he continues to work with the issues of school bullying, and I would like him to, at this point, talk more about why he's so passionate about this issue.
Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. St. Germain. Please state your name for the record. And
David St. David St. Germain.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bullying is an epidemic and the number one obstacle to learning in Minnesota schools. I believe through my involvement as a teacher and a teacher trainer, I've been training teachers for 20 years, and we as adults are the only ones that can stop it. Kids are powerless. So many kids don't want to share things because they don't want to make it worse. And so if we do things and we allow things to continue, it's a spiral down for kids. And for me, as a parent, you only know pain when you feel it through your children. And when your children are the victims of bullies, you feel powerless to do anything. And those of you who are parents understand what I'm talking about. And if you have a child, we have three children, and one of them was entertainment for other kids. So as a teacher, I saw it in the classroom, and I acted on it, but I couldn't do anything at home with my own child except be there for him. Bullying is pervasive in our schools, student to student, student to adult, adult to student, and adult to adult. Most of the change that we can't have happen in schools is because of the fact that we have a bully environment that is going on. And there's all kinds of things that we can do in departments where somebody wants to try something new and the department or the grade level says, no, this is the way we do it here. And so the only way that we can do something is to start with children and create a way in which it's a safe place for them. School's got to be a place that you want to go to in the morning and come back to at night. The definition from the National Institute of Health is bullying is defined as physically attacking, hitting, slapping, or pushing. And that's what we see it as. We see it as the big kid on the recess in fourth grade. And really, it is about verbally attacking another person through name-calling, threats, psychological means as rumors, sexual slurs, or exclusion. So we can extend our tentacles out to the web and the internet, but really the only way we're going to solve it is to solve it in the classroom. And to solve a teacher to kid and kid to kid. One out of four kids is bullied in America in a year. One out of five kids admits to being a bully. That translates to 10 million kids who admit it. And these are conservative statistics because what I find when I train is people don't know what bullying is. Bully is a bad word, but when you say harassment, we start to understand it. And it's about emotional harassment. It's about the fact that when you go to school, if there's name-calling, you want to go back. And all of you know what I'm talking about. We've all experienced bullying, but some kids are the focal point of this. And it's a daily hell for them. They call it a war zone when you talk to kids. But school is a war zone for me. Just take 43% of kids fear harassment in bathrooms. I have faculty members. And when I talk about educators, what I'm talking about is teachers, support staff, principals. Kids fear, 43% of them fear to go to the bathroom. There are places in school where people don't want to go to the B lunch because somebody's intimidating them there. And they don't want to go there. This is supposed to be a place that's a soft place to land. You can't learn if you're frightened.
So we want to do testing? Well, this is something you can't do in a lot of schools. You can't raise your hand and ask a question. You can't go, I don't understand this, because other kids will intimidate you. So, and if you want to know more about bullying, the easiest thing to do is to go to the school that's closest to you, walk into the lunchroom at noon, and sit down with kids and say, tell me about bullying here. So anytime we have a law or any kind of procedure, that's great. But what is it really operationally happening in that building for kids? And that's what I do when I go into a building, and it is breathtaking when you talk with children about this. The harms of bullying from the National Institute of Health is bullying is a public health problem that causes depression, low self-esteem. Bullies are more likely to engage in criminal behavior when they get older. Bullies and victims have difficulty in social and psychological environments. Victims have difficulty making friends, poor personal relationships, and bouts with loneliness. So what happens is that one of the reasons that we have problems with bullying is that we're ignorant. We don't know what it is. What I'm hoping with this small thing that we're asking that happen in this is that a conversation takes place in the building level, that says, let's talk about bullying. What does it mean? Because if we're only thinking bullying is the F word, the N word, the C word, we're in deep trouble. Because for me, the F word is fat. That's the word. Kids are very creative in how they can bully with words. And they're soul-scarring events. I can ask you a series of questions to bring you back to your childhood about what happened to you, but I can't retrieve you from that. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a therapist. This is very simply about the fact, what can we do? How can we get our oar in the water as educators? And only you can help us. Only a mandate from you can help us, because we're not going to do it on our own. We've got voluntary programs and optional programs, and we got a wonderful policy from Minnesota School Boards Association, a model policy, but it's not implemented. It's sitting in drawers of superintendents. It's sitting in drawers of principals. These conversations aren't happening. And so this is the only way that we can get some kind of change for kids, and this is one small incremental step. We as educators need your help. We're not going to do this on our own in my lifetime. I can guarantee what I'm asking here is not going to happen if we leave it to just momentum or inertia of the present system. We need your leadership on this as we needed it in creating the initial law, because the initial law is really important. But all it says is you have to have one. It doesn't say you have to do anything with it. I got a policy. We have a policy. What are you doing with it? This says all we're asking, and I don't know a teacher or educator in Minnesota that would be against the fact that when something happens, the principal is going to contact the bully, the parents of the bully, and let them know what happened. This is parent involvement at its best. We need this notification mandate to move this law from a document into a working policy that could potentially impact all kinds of kids. Parent notification moves us to the first incremental step toward student and parent involvement and the solvency process of dealing with this. I would love to know that as a teacher that when I had difficulty with a kid and I needed to escalate it to the principal level, that principal was going to contact those parents. I want to see those parents. And if we're doing this in elementary school and middle school, by the time we get to senior high, I want principals to be focusing on major issues in the school. In elementary school, what we're saying is, don't tattle. And in senior high, we're saying, tell us. We want to know if they've got a gun. And the only way we're going to do this is to open this up. So, we need to move this from a voluntary and optional program, which is a patchwork, to a mandated, required program that is practical. And we need to operationalize this law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. St. Germain. So the bill would direct that the parent or guardian of the bullier or the bully be contacted. Based on your experience, what would be your hope and desire that would come out of that contact with the parent and guardian? Probably a self evident, but I mean, I think it's important to articulate what you would hope would come out of that direct action.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The situation is every district has to have a policy. So what does that policy say? I talk to more administrators and teachers that don't have a clue as to what their policy says. That tells me that it's just something that we've checked off the list. So that could what will happen is that you're going to have a conversation at the building level and talk about this. What do we want to have happen here? And, you know, so many times when you're a teacher and you have a child, and the child is has questionable behaviors and takes a lot of your time, and teachers know and the principals know what I'm saying when I say this, you just say, wait till you meet the parents. Most of the time, these are parents that need to come in. These are parents that we at least need to contact and let them know. So my hope would be that a conversation would ensue between the parent and the administrator, and that there would be ongoing conversation about this child. I want to know if my child was a bully. And because my child is a victim, there's a bully and a bystander. There's also another area called a victim bully that vacillates back and forth between being a victim and being a bully because they've learned these bully behaviors. If that's my child, I want to be involved. I want to talk with him. I want to help him be successful in school. So that would be my hope. But at the very least, what we're saying is that there would be some notification, whatever in that district policy, to that parent of the bully.
Very well. There are four members who have questions. I'm wondering whether, I know that there are folks in the audience that wish to testify against the bill. I'm thinking it might be helpful to hear that testimony. Unless there's something very specific to St. Germain, please let me. I think that might be a more productive way to go, and then we can have Mr. St. Germain stay here for the question and answer, if that's okay with you, sir.
Yes.
Very well. We have John Miller Hagen, I hope I pronounced that right, with MESPA, and Dr. Fred Sorty, also with MESPA. Okay. And then we also have Jan Alzwager from Education Minnesota. And perhaps we can take these two gentlemen's testimony first, and then Jan, perhaps you can come up afterwards. And then if there's anyone else that wishes to testify, just signal. But then we'll get right into questions and answers. Good morning, gentlemen. Good to
morning.
See you all. Good to see you both. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
I'm John Miller Hagen. I'm principal at Washburn Elementary School in Bloomington, and I'm currently the president-elect for Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association. K-12 Policy Committee and Representative Mariani, chair of our committee, thank you for the opportunity for us to be here to speak. We appreciate that. We too, as principals, value the experiences and efforts towards anti-bullying and teaching our children to treat each other with respect and safety, so much so that as a part of the current law, which was very good law, we have, and previous to that, but we've learned as we've gone along this process, that many, many schools have significant programs in place around bullying, following, in our school specifically, responsive classroom meetings in the morning where teachers talk about issues with children as they come up and are able to manage those things individually. Social worker presentations, character education programs, one of which in our school we're using Changing Lives. We even do parent book studies and coursework with our parents. And one of the programs we taught at Washburn is a program called Love and Logic to empower children to be making good choices and to have an opportunity to stand up for themselves. We do monthly character assemblies where children honor, we honor children and the correct choices that they make from day to day and treating each other positively. The other thing it's important to know is that as administrators and teachers, we collaborate closely with each other and investigate every report. If a report comes to us, we take the time that it takes to investigate with the children, interview the children, listen to the issues, and then proceed with the appropriate actions in each case. Our core ethical values in our school are honesty, respect, integrity, citizenship, honesty, and teamwork. And schools are really focusing on these kinds of things happening for their children. Without a question, the intensity around a bully experience is devastating for a child. It's devastating for a parent. And we believe the current law helps us meet that need of trying to minimize those experiences for families in schools. The addition to the policy that requires administrators to notify a student's parent or guardian has an initial intent that it's reasonable to say that a parent should know so that the parent can do something about that action and that behavior. And as responsible parents and people that care about what our children are doing, when we get that call, we do something about that right away. Unfortunately, I share with you that many, many times as an administrator, the difficulty and time invested in trying to contact some parents can be exhausting in the amount of number of calls and time and communication with the parents. The biggest challenge is just getting a hold of them. And in some cases, we're uncertain about how a parent may react in the experience of explaining a bully issue. And so therefore, to leave it to a principal's discretion about how much we communicate with the parent is sometimes beneficial. The law, or this item as it's written, says that we must contact. And currently, that takes place. We contact parents often. Every teacher has a phone in their room. We make many, many, many calls to parents about issues and about concerns and about good things that happen for kids. But to mandate it in the law micromanages what a principal does and the good decisions that they're able to make day to day about whether the depth of a response to a bully experience should involve that parent. As an example, from time to time, we have parents take things into their own hands and we'll sort these things outside of school, and that gets to be a difficult experience to manage. And it's not good. We have an unintended outcome. The idea of communicating with a parent seems like it makes a lot of sense, and it does, in almost all cases. This statement would require us to do that in every case. There are some cases where we're able to manage an experience with a child and for a parent to yield a much more productive result. So we submit that the law as it's written is very, very good, and we embrace it, and our activities in our schools really allow us to create good things for kids. And we are committed to communicating with parents. But to have it in mandate, in some cases, will cause an unintended outcome.
Thank you, Mr. Miller-Hagan. Just a quick question. In your school, do the policies, and I take it that most schools are, to a large degree, adopting the MSBA policy framework. In your school, I've not seen the policy, so I don't know what's all in it. Does the policy speak to the issue of contacting the parents of bullies? Does it make recommendations about that?
Are you requesting for the MSBA or for my district?
For the MSBA policy, unless you're following a different policy framework. But
We follow a slightly different policy
you do.
Framework.
Okay. So what is your policy framework?
Our policy is the bullying experiences that are prohibited are identified in, I can go through the electronic form, Internet use, gestures, written types of bullying. And then the disciplinary action is kind of an inclusive experience. Disciplinary action may include, but is not limited to, one of the following. Conferences with the teacher, principal, or counselor, parent contact, parent conference, and then it goes on to say removal of class, in-school suspensions, and so forth. So very often, the right thing to do is to not only contact the parent, but to bring them in for a conference, maybe a little education, maybe some follow-up meetings with parents. Sometimes the energy that it takes to follow through with some parents, we'll be better utilized and get a better result by spending time creating a positive behavior intervention for that child and focusing on the child's experience and learning in order to manage the bullying experience in itself.
Okay. Thank you. That's Sturdy.
Good morning, Representative Mariani and members of the K-12 committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Also, my colleague Joanne Cornelis from the Secondary Principals Association was not able to be here this morning, but I know I'm speaking for secondary principals as well with our concern on the proposed language here. I'd just like to reinforce what John Millerhagen has said, and that's the fact that we do embrace bullying prevention education, and we do embrace the fact that every school district should have a bully prevention policy. We feel very strongly that we need to create a culture of non-bullying within our schools. We know that communication is king. Communication is key. And we feel very strongly that we need to communicate with our parents. Our concern, and our 1,800 constituents would say, we have plenty of mandates already about reporting, and their concern, what we hear from principals in the field, is they would not like to have another reporting mandate.
Very well. We do have, thank you, Dr. Sturdy. We do have four questions. I'd like to be able to get through all the questions of the committee members who will be laying this bill over at 10 o'clock. Representative Demers. Oh, I'm sorry. I did ask for Education Minnesota. Thank you, Representative Farley. And MSBA, too. Come on forward. It's actually appropriate since MSBA has the statewide model policy that they face and that I assume many school districts either use directly or have modified for their own use. So Mr. Schneiderwin.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderwin. I'm on staff of the Minnesota School Board Association, and you're right. I think as you go through this discussion, I think it's important to recognize that this is a mandated policy, and it's a very broad policy that allows some local discretion on within that policy. Our model policy is very aggressive. I mean, it addresses many of these issues that we're talking about here. And I think it's important, and I apologize for not having a copy today, but we will make sure that you get a copy of this to let you know what that model policy is. But I think it's important to note that under the school district action piece is that it spells out and identifies within the model policy that school officials will notify the parent or guardians of students involved in the bullying incident and remedial action taken. So it's very important, that piece is within that context, and we heard from the principal on how they modified their approach from this model policy to make it more workable for the local district. And I think that was part of the committee's 2 years ago when they examined this policy. They didn't want to become overly prescriptive in this nature and allowed some discretion to the local boards. And the model policy is a very, very aggressive, and it even goes to the point where that there's consequences for employees and other students who condone or intentionally false report what may be happening in the bullying circumstance. So, and then there's also a piece that talks about the training component. We touched on that a little bit as well, that this policy would require an annual update, an annual training component for training the staff and the administrators on the pieces on identifying bullying and what steps need to be taken for that. So I think that it's important that you know this, that the conversation is had, that and with this mandated policy is given to every district. We have 317 of our 340 school districts who pay to be a part of our policy services, and we as school districts, as you know, do a great job in terms of trying to eliminate bullying, and my experiences in going into schools is not a war zone. I mean, they're very inviting, warm environments. I think it's important to understand that we're taking steps and positive steps to eliminate that. So,
Thank you. Ms. Altschlager.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dan Altschlager, Education Minnesota, and I'm here for two purposes. One, to speak in support of the bill, and also in support of the amendment that was made. And I initially wasn't going to testify, but after knowing that others were going to testify against it, I wanted to give some support to the work that Senator, or to the Representative Peterson is doing, because I think it's very important. In order to change this behavior that is happening in the classroom, you're going to have to change the school culture. And the whole feeling from administrators, teachers, and any worker in the school. One of the things that I think is most important is changing the climate. A teacher spends so much time often on discipline, and if you start to change the underlying problems related to bullying, you can also impact the time it is spent on discipline. Specifically, in terms of looking at the MSBA policy, while, you know, it's good, as Mr. St. Germain said, it often does sit in a drawer, or maybe even the policy isn't as extensive. And by saying the school official in the model policy, you are then saying it could be the bus driver, it could be the teacher, it could be the cafeteria worker, it could be anybody. It could be the administrator or the teacher. But all of those, I think, would be defined as a school official. So by my main point is that by having the administrator work, contacting the parents, what you're doing is taking it a level up, because teachers need support. They have a tremendous job with all of the testing, with all the standards to instruct students. So what we would like to see is a collaboration between the teachers, the school staff, and the administrator, because you need consistent implementation of a misbehavior. If one teacher has one way of disciplining the child, and then that child has the same bullying problem throughout their elementary career, for example, and gets different consequences throughout that year, throughout those years, I don't think we're doing the kids a service that we should. If you have an administrator doing that, they see Johnny Smith coming in at kindergarten, having a bullying problem, and that administrator can follow through with that child all the way through grade 5. And it should be a collaboration between the school staff, and I'm especially talking about the teachers, and the administrators, so that there is a burden on both to actually have something happen. The school staff are going to report it to the administrator, and the administrator would contact the parents. And we think that's one of the good ways that we can get administrators and building principals and superintendents to realize that this is a problem and that more training needs to occur, so that district-wide we can prevent bullying.
Thank you, Ms. Altschlager. We have five representatives with questions. Let's try to get them all in, so make sure the questions are concise and that the answers are also concise. This is a very important issue. I suspect, like many of you who are, especially I think all of us here are parents, we've probably experienced this. I certainly have, and it is a very painful, it was a very painful period of time in my family when we had this experience. Representative Demmer, then Representative Smalley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it your intent to vote on this today?
No, I will say Deborah will be lying this
time. Okay. I do have a question, and I guess, Mr. St. Germain, you may be the best, or possibly even, I want to say Sandy. Sorry, Representative Peterson. Sorry, I'm getting too informal here. Can you define for me, what do you intend to notify to me? What's your intent for what notify would be?
Mr. St. Germain.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I have no intention. There's a policy. Every district's supposed to have it. That's local control. It's about whatever they've decided that they're going to do, that would be the notification. So when we're told that, you know, this is a difficult policy, there's nothing in here that says you have to repeatedly call them. There's nothing that says you have to email them or send them a registered letter. This is all the policy that's supposed to be in place. And all we're saying is that you notify, not the victim, we're just saying notify the parent of the bully to let them know that this is happening. So this is a very simple, I mean, when we look at this, this is one out of 15 points in the Vermont law. This is only one, Vermont has 15 things that they do.
What we're saying is there's only one thing here, and this is bipartisan. It has nothing, bullying has nothing to do with Republicans, Democrats. It has nothing to do with anything. Little kids are struggling. And if we can't do this little incremental change, I don't know what we're going to do with bullying in Minnesota. Because we have a model program, and all that means is it's a suggestion. Let me tell you, it's not a suggestion to kids about being bullied. It's great to give choice to school districts, but you have no choice as a child. There's all kinds of advocates in this room. There isn't an advocate for the child here. And as parents, that's what we become. I don't want parents advocating in the school. I don't want that. We're not in this to be fighting with each other. So it's whatever the district is doing is would be the notification.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I will be. I agree with you. I think it is a question of local control, except I would go one step further. And I would say, quite frankly, it should be local control as to what the policy is. Should they notify, who they notify, if and when they notify, I think that all can be local control. We have locally elected school boards. We have administrators who care a great deal. We have teachers who care a great deal. They all have input into these things. I have concern about when we start putting this kind of thing into, I do believe it's too prescriptive. I think it's too micromanaging from the standpoint of saying, you will have a policy. And by the way, here's what will be in that policy also. There are a lot of people that are much, much smarter than I am out in these school districts, I think, can take their culture into account, that can take into account their local school district issues to know who to notify and when and if they should notify them. I think most probably do that already. But I just don't think we need to go there as a legislature and be this prescriptive and put this mandate on them with more reporting and quite frankly, giving somebody an opportunity to interpret, notify some other way or shape or form. I just think we set our schools up for, again, something else they have to comply with and deal with, and potentially could have the negative effect of saying, I don't want to get into a big policy thing here, so let's just deal with it on our own and not say anything because we don't have to get into a big string of things that we're mandated by state to do. So I have concerns with this level of micromanaging.
Mr. Chair, can I respond to that?
Very quickly.
The policy is already mandated according to the current law that every district has to have a policy. And that policy is spelled out. The school board has the model policy, and many districts have already accepted that. And according to all of the players in this game, every one of those policies requires reporting. And it has a process. Depending upon the local, they may change. They could use the school board process, or they can use their own local process. But there is a process for reporting. This just takes that little incremental step of saying it won't sit in the drawer as a policy. It will actually be carried out.
Helpful clarification. Thank you. Representative Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pearson, I want to thank you for bringing it forward. And Mr. Germain, I want to thank Germaine. Thank you for your passion. You know, Representative Pearson, my concern is that there is a major comprehensive reform afoot on bullying. Senator Dibble's been working on it. Frank Hornstein's been working on it. Senator Reeder's been working on it. I just have concerns when we are passing policies piecemeal here, when really there is a movement to do a comprehensive bill. Representative Pearson, are you familiar with that? Were you willing to check into that and see how this fits into that, and if it was good to pass this piecemeal, or if we should really be looking at the overall direction?
So Representative Flowers, part of what the chair hopes to do is in fact to lay this over, because I do know at least one other bill that will be introduced shortly. I think Representative Dabney, I think you're going to be introducing a bill, and I'm hearing that possibly from others as well. Representative Peterson, quickly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Flowers, I have read the bill. I'm very aware of it. And it's much more detailed, and there are some things in there that I would really need to consider, and I'll ask Mr. Germain to Saint Germain to talk about it very briefly too. But this is just a tiny little step. That's a really big that bill is a really big comprehensive step, and I think they need to be considered separately at this point in time. Maybe at some point we will want to merge them, but at this point in time, we feel that this is just a little piece that we need to move ahead. And if everybody's convinced that we need to take a bigger step, then that's fine. But Mr.
Well, let me ask Representative Norton. I want to try to get some of these vetted out.
Okay.
Representative Abler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hadn't thought about this much until I
My son was in the bathroom, and one of his friends was being bullied, and he beat up the kid who was bullying the little kid. And got sent to the principal's office. We thought that was actually kind of cool. Although we were supposed to act like we were mad, but we were happy. But the principal didn't get the story straight. And so when they talked to us, we had little meeting, and the teacher didn't get the, they thought that he had been the initiator, and it turns out he was the rescuer. And so I could see at least a little merit in what you're trying to do here. Although I hadn't thought about that part. Is there a reason you're not telling the victim's parents, too? That's my question.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we actually discussed that, and we discussed it with the counsel, with Lisa Larson, and we do get into privacy issues and some other far more contentious discussion, so we just didn't go there. We decided to take a baby step right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question really is more to the two elementary school principals. I know, in our discussions, and Representative Demmer, I think, we had some good points regarding mandates and really trying to remove any discretion. You mentioned sort of some instances in which you may not be as productive, for lack of a better term, in calling parents. Could you give us some specific for instance on that, when perhaps you can try to work out some behavior or modifications without bringing the parents in?
While you come down, perhaps Representative Downey, if you can just quickly air, because you're the last one I have on the list, what your question or thought was.
Actually, a fairly similar question. Is there in this provision an exception that would allow for circumstances such as an abusive home where, frankly, the notification may be the absolutely worst thing for that kid? Is there an ability for some discretion to be applied by the district or the principals? And maybe that's a question for the test star coming up.
Mr. Chair and Representative, again, it's up to the local policy. If they wish to have that kind of discretion, and they may think that is something they should have, there can be various levels of notification. That policy can be very clear under what kinds of circumstances a parent would be notified, etc. But it does say, and I think because it says according to the policy, and so it's what the local policy would say, and hopefully, the School Board Association has a policy they think would address this, and they're at this point also saying that every bullying incident should be reported in some way.
Members, we are past our time. We're going to have to adjourn at this point. This issue will arise again. The chair will play this bill over, and I suspect we'll be hearing some other bills related to this shortly. So with that, thank you, Mr. St. Germain, Mr. Peterson, other testifiers. We are until tomorrow at 8:30. This committee is adjourned.